Namaste, and welcome to this week three feedback. Before I get really into the homework that's been sent in, I need to ask a couple of favors from you. And this isn't really in order to help me to keep doing this as effectively as possible. The time commitment is becoming more and more for myself, which is fine. It's part of it, and that's what I want to do, to work with you guys more than anything. But I need to ask you a few things in order to make that possible. So the first is not to send homework to Facebook or to email it directly to the Dissolving Ego course. It won't get seen. I can only answer things that are sent in via the contact form so that it's all in one place. And also, can you please not write anything that you don't want me to share? There are things being sent in that I have to filter out at the moment through emails and through personal details that would be best not shared. So if you can kind of write what's going on in a general way, that's much easier for me. And also can try to keep it concise and to the point of the things that we're actually studying. This question, where am I? A reading of the Gita's as the author, as the noumenon itself, and to the causality. And also not to send in anything that you don't want me to answer via this kind of recording. I can't reply to any emails that come in, and I can't reply to any contact forms that come in with homework that you don't want read out. I just don't have the time now, as much as I'd like to. And I have to begin to work a little bit smarter rather than longer hours as this is going. You know, right now there's a 20 or so of us in this graduate program, and in November is going to increase after, well, perhaps December, after the next Dissolving Ego course. So if you can keep it concise, to the point, and to the method that I've asked you to send it in, that would be fantastic. And less am I going to have time to be able to filter things out. So it's going to get read out exactly as you send it in, more and more. I also, a couple of times, people have asked me to send back to them what I've received from them, and I can't do that. And it's best to make a copy of it before you send it, if that's what you want. You can type it in a Word document or an email first and then send it into the contact form if that's what you want to keep a record of. Okay, so there's quite a lot of homework this time, so I might split this into two sessions. We'll see. Okay, so first one. Hi, Helen. Hearing myself speak the Gita as Helen or as the One is an experience of a falling away of all that I am not. There is this dissolution of this dream that I am when spoken by me, a compassionate permission to let go. Spoken over and over again, this just deepens. Good, good. Permission to stop, permission to rest, permission to be. There is very little resistance felt when listening to this. It's good. And just to stay in that kind of contemplative, that open contemplative thing that the Gita's will take you into, that high state, is going to be dissolving your ability to suffer even as you are going about the rest of your life. A moment spent in timelessness is going to give you so much more than just that moment. As soon as stress energy is felt, where am I does not allow it any traction, because there's no location there, is there? There is no person, no time, no space, anything. And that's why checking in with this question is going to halt these karmic patterns in there before they get into this massive train of thought. It has no footing when this question becomes an automatic practice. There we go. See, there's the key right there, automatic practice. All doubt, fear, sadness, and anger are allowed their voices, but no residence in me. That's beautiful. The trick is consistency. I am experiencing the background anxiety that I felt for no reason, for no reason at all, and being met with this presence that dissolves it. There is no effort in this. So stuff is going to come up, and it's also going to be dissolving in this open place of this question, where I have no location, I have no karmic patterns, I have no progress, I have no imperfection, no flaws, nothing to change or resolve. Nothing ever changed or happened to me. That's more and more the constant experience. And even while stuff is happening in the body, stuff's coming up and being triggered, it will be dissolving in that openness. My someoneness has a certain flavour that I'm starting to recognise. Good. It is in obvious contrast to my everywhereness. This is my opportunity to inquire. So the more you stay in this open place, the more expansive and light and free you're going to feel, and the more quickly you're going to notice when that experience changes back to having picked up a location and something. It has a certain flavour, as said here. So that it's easier and easier to go, ooh, what's that? I feel a little constricted now. Let me check that out. Okay. It feels like my karmic patterns are being accelerated because I am applying what I know and more opportunities for application are arising. I'm just watching my judgment as they come up. Good. My question is, what is happening when asking where am I? My someoneness does seem to disappear. And the same trigger seems to happen on another level the next time. Feels more on the surface or further away. Are the gains from this inquiry permanent? Absolutely, absolutely. The more time you spend in that conscious recognition that you are everywhere, meaning you have no place particularly where you are, you're present and you're not in someone somewhere, you're everywhere, then it's going to be clearer and clearer to your mind, to your body, to your cells, to your tissues, that you never, ever were somewhere, ever. So these patterns will come back again. As you said, it's accelerating, but because you're consciously working with them now, and you might even begin to feel joy when they come up because yes, this is another layer peeled back and another opportunity to take this deeper. The gains from this inquiry are absolute and absolutely permanent, meaning you're working on one pattern, one trigger, and you're seeing, what you're actually seeing is that you were never someone ever. You were never ever somewhere only. That's clearer and clearer every time you ask this question. What that means is anything that comes up ever becomes less and less relevant and is just something happening in the body clearing out. And it's handled more and more automatically, as you said earlier in this feedback, from your everywhereness. And it's clearer that we're either, it gets really simple in the end, we're either thinking we're someone somewhere or we're everywhere. You cannot be both at once. So important that you cannot be somewhere and everywhere, even though you'll still seem to be someone somewhere. As well, there's a body there. Be clearer and clearer that all the problems that come with being a someone, even the great problem of how to wake up and realize the self, are no longer relevant to you, less and less. So you're peeling back these layers. I describe these layers in Transcending the Mind book. Each time these things come up, you can see them clearer. It's not about the thing out there. It's not about even how I feel in here. It's about my sense of separation. And then the furthest layer back, the simplest layer is this recognition that it's not even about my idea that I'm a separate being in the end. It's my idea that there's something other than my everywhereness, that it's possible for me to be somewhere and everywhere at the same time. And I think that's what you're starting to see with this. It's very exciting. So yeah, surface more, and you get to a point actually where for me, there was things coming up, still triggers happening, and I couldn't even notice them because I was just so established in this everywhereness. And it's like you're immune to anything that happens somewhere in terms of being triggered by something. So good, good. Very, very exciting. And thank you for that feedback. It's wonderful. Okay, so this is okay. Namaste, Helen. Not sure where to start really with my story, so I'll start with now. I'm peaceful and calm, reading the Bhagavad Gita in the sun, enjoying my garden. I'm reading as a student. There is attachment to the idea that I am a student, so I'm investigating this. As I look down the body and then at the garden, I shut my eyes and it's all gone. If I put my fingers in my ears, the sound is gone. There's no distractions. There's a knowing that I am. Yet after seeing I have no body in the retreat, there appears to have been a shocking test. Migraine, just like that flashing lights which were pains 20 minutes later, but no panic. I looked inside for the familiar, wanting to run for the nasal meds and painkillers. I did what I needed to do, then slept 15 hours. But it was all within a blissful, peaceful me, separate from the events. The pain was felt, but something was missing, the fret and fear. Good going until a day later, full-on asthma attack at work. But this one is the one mind was relentless and punishing. The head pain returned, and for 3 days I just suffered. It built to a sort of climax with a feeling of a melting down and erupting force felt in the body mind was going mad. That was yesterday. I want to ask, can I have a dark night of the body after seeing like I had at the weekend? I know without doubt it's all being watched. I know this, but I couldn't experience it even repeatedly, asking the question, where am I? Something gave in the night, and here I am, like my God. That's a story and a half. Not one part of this illusionary body and mind didn't suffer. I lay in bed waiting to explode, not sure whether it be the body or the mind or both. And now, having read all your book cover to cover, I am really okay. I do have questions, because the mind is the mind at its worst picks holes in everything said. There definitely is the idea of a person here resisting the illusion story. Yet I know that if there is no separate being, there is no resistance. I feel possessed at times, then it leaves. I'm now wanting to delete this story and get to the point. Something else, the me, my true nature, is in charge watching. There is only that, and that... There is only that, and that's it. But it appears that the duality I believe in somewhere inflicts lots of suffering. If I think quietly in a very regimented way, I know this. There's a stubbornness, a force that really believes the gap, a me and a them. It's a roundabout of rubbish. I try to accept it all, but there's the force that's so uncomfortable with the untruth that I can barely cope with it. I can't stand this untruth anymore. There's so much emotion and sadness and turmoil. I can't live like this. I need to just let it drop and put it down. As I write this, my head is raging, my heart fast and hot again. I know there's only me. I know this is so. Why then am I typing this to a you? Helen, who is me? I listen for instruction. Then the head says, see if it's all illusion. Why listen to the... this goes on for quite some time. Let's see if I can try to find a question in this. Okay. So this is really difficult for me to answer, because there's a lot in it. I would just have to say that if you're coming in and out of this realization, seemingly out of this pure place, it's because you've picked up a location again. I don't really have the ability to pick out of that one particular thing. There's a lot being written here. If you could send me a concise question next time, it'd be much easier for me to help you with this. You can see that from what you've written, I think you can see that it's illusion. Any time you're suffering is when you've picked up a location again. And it has to become concrete inside yourself. Like if you can't find where you are, then you have to begin to disidentify with any suffering that's happening in one particular body. And that's only been taken halfway at this point. You're doing the question, and that's great, and you're seeing more and more that you don't have a location. But the moment that begins to change, you need to start investigating. The moment you start to suffer, have I picked up a location again? How do I know which is my body? How do I know which perspective I'm looking from? Can I pick up any suffering that happens in any body at all, any body, when I don't know where I am or when I'm everywhere? That needs to be there. So I hope you found peace from this, but at the same time, if you could send it in a much more concise way, then I'd be able to help you much easier. There's just too much there for me to pick through, and too much going on. All of this is going to seem relevant to you while it's playing, but afterwards you can look at what the core issue is, and that's the sense of having a location. So it's probably best not to try to feed back homework if you're right in the middle of the suffering. If you can wait till after and send it in a concise form that I can really help you work with. But the only thing that's ever wrong with us is we feel that we're someone somewhere. Can any of this that you've written, be affecting your everywhereness? And that's the thing, you need to stay in that clear space. Otherwise, the moment you pick up duality everywhere and somewhere, you're going to begin to suffer. Okay, so we'll move on to the next one. I don't mean to seem cold with that. It's just that I want to help you the most effective way. I don't want to go through the minutiae of the day-to-day suffering in this graduate program. It's really for feedback on how you're applying the question and how you're applying the stuff on causality actually in the lessons, and that will bring you out of it fastest. That's why I'm being so direct. I know how painful it gets towards the end if you go back into illusion. I remember it vividly, and that's why I'm trying to keep you out of it in the fastest way possible. Okay, so namaste, Helen. I was just listening to your week 2 update and it really hit me what you said. I have been lazy and avoiding all of what has come through Facebook, etc. I feel overwhelmed and was getting lost in all the web pages and felt I just want to be still. I think that should be. But now I realize that it was a cop-out, and I, the absolute mind attacks and self-identification have been so strong over the last week that I thought I was going crazy. Issues of trust, jealousy were so intense, and I believed again that I was this person suffering, and it has to stop. This indulgence of drama and manipulation. So listening to you has made me realize that this fire you talk about was just simmering, and that's why you haven't seen my homework. I need your kick in my butt. Well, we all do at that point. We all need it. It's nature of a human being. It's natural that when you start to feel some peace and get some insights, you take your foot off the gas. We all do it. I did it. And we drop the inquiry, and then we don't realize we've done that until we're really suffering again. Inquiry has to become constant, and for the joy of it, for what it reveals to you, not constant as in time and clock, you know, as in every waking minute, but constant as in don't let it drop. Put some time each day to doing this, even if it's only 5 minutes in the morning, asking this, where am I? I still do that now. I don't know if I'm beyond this point where I could go back and start suffering again. I'd like to think so. Feels like I am, but I'm not going to take that for granted. And also the inquiry, the question, the staying in that real place becomes such a joy. And also the recognition you are immune there to anything that can hurt you, anything at all. Even when ego flares up one of these massive moments. And the more awake you are, the more life is going to kick you if you go back into duality. Duality here meaning my embracing my someoneness, believing it's possible to be somewhere and everywhere. Can you be everywhere, the entire universe, and somewhere at the same time? Is that not two rather than one? So I need your kick in my butt. Good. It's good that you realize that. Really good. I did feel after your talk with Ian, it shifted. and I've been inquiring more and enjoying the seeing. It brought up a question on desire, though. I really want a bigger house than I'm in now, but I get confused about the idea that I'm everywhere, but I still feel I'm in this house. Anyway, I thought I'd show up to let you know what's happening, and yes, I feel there's been a shift of being, as today when teaching yoga, it was the lightest and beautiful class, I thought, because I was the noumenon most of the time. Good. Thank you, Helen. I don't want to take you for granted as just another phenomenon that appeared on the web. I am grateful. So I appreciate that. Thank you. It's okay to want things. Your body and mind are going to want things like a bigger house or something. And there will still be this sense of being someone somewhere. That's not the same as actually believing I am somewhere. And your desires will naturally fulfill themselves. The manifestation will happen effortlessly if you stay in your everywhereness. Desires, even now, they're not really desires. They're just senses that this is how the manifestation is going to go. So some feeling that perhaps I would have described as desire, it's really just because you're outside of time as the everywhereness. And you can see where the manifestation is going. Why? Because you know you're where you're at and where things are going. It's not rocket science to kind of predict where manifestation is going to go. It's going to be expanding, getting better all the time on all levels, materially, financially, relationships, all of it, work, awakening. And with that comes a sense of desire arising, but it should be clearer that the desire means it's already being fulfilled. I'm feeling it in this body because it's happening. Nothing can get in the way of that manifestation as the one, and nothing can block that. So that'll just be a natural thing. You will seem to be someone somewhere still, so that you can know that you're teaching yoga and not the student. Otherwise, it just gets really confusing. But it's a sense. It's a sense of being someone rather than an actuality that we believe in and therefore suffer because we feel divided. And you can know that you're everywhere with increasing clarity and also feel, or it seems to be, that you're somewhere. That's how it will be more and more. And that's the beauty of being a human being. You get to experience both. You get to consciously know that you're never going to die and that nothing can hurt you. And also experience the fun part of being someone somewhere. Okay. Next one. Dear Helen, thank you so much for the extra class today. I very much appreciated. Contemplating the question, where am I? I thought of Ramana's statement, consciousness has to appear in this form, so this form can recognize consciousness. Following this, every time I'm aware of the beauty and harmony of nature, feeling love for my cat, feeling joyful, energetic, and content with the way things are at the moment, would that mean I'm tuned in with the noumenon? Would this be a good practice? It's a good practice, but it's not quite as direct as actually staying with the question, where am I? It will make you feel good, but it will drop away when attention goes off the inquiry. When you stay with this question, where am I? What's actually happening is you are, every single time you ask this question, you are moving further and further away from the ability to suffer. So much so that you might not even recognize when that's dropped away at some point. It was the same for me, because the joy of the question and the experience of not knowing anything at all begin to overpower everything else. Even our addiction to thinking we're someone somewhere is overpowered by these kind of questions. So it's really important to begin to, if you can, recognize the mind's ability to distract you. Questions should take you back to the silence. It should take you back to absolutely nothing at all, the absolute reality. And to stay in that place as often as you can and to notice your tendency to get distracted. So what you're doing is really, really good. I'm just wanting to point out a more direct way to stay in your real Buddha nature, much more permanently and effortlessly, just like a bird taking off has to flap its wings quite a lot to get off the ground and fight with gravity. As it gets further up in the air, it can flap less and less effort to stay, and then eventually effortlessly gliding. And your job is to stay on the straight and narrow path with these questions and watch for these distractions that mind's going to give you. Feeling good and feeling connected and harmonious are also happening to someone somewhere. To not know where you are at all from this "where am I" question, it doesn't have any immediate benefits that the mind can see. And yet it's giving you, I can't put into words what this question will give you. We're starting to see that as we move into week 3 with some of this feedback. You will get everything, you'll feel good also, and everything else. You'll be immune to suffering. You'll be liberated forever. No matter how many more bodies come and go, you won't be able to believe any illusion. You will be a beneficial presence to the world. Everything you touch will turn to love. Everyone you touch will be affected. Everyone you meet. So it's well worth making sure that mind doesn't try to derail this inquiry, and it will because of the power of it. Mind is afraid of power. It associates it with force. But the power of the real self is gentle and loving. So keep up the good work, and it's great that you're seeing benefits from it. But keep going deeper, keep tunneling. It's like at this point in the graduate program you're on, it's really straight and narrow path with the question. Mind's going to try to get you to fall off this thin and narrow path, or it's like a long, thin tunnel. You stay with one thing long enough consistently, and when you come out the other side, you've completely changed. You are that butterfly then. You went in a caterpillar, you come out the butterfly. How that happened, we don't know. We just know the power of this question washed away time and space and duality and suffering, all of that. So wonderful, wonderful. Okay, we'll do one more, and then I'll take a break for a while. Whom shall I worship now? Where shall I place my devotion? I find nothing to rest my attention on. I cannot find anyone to help me. Reading the first paragraph on reverence to the One left me with a sense of grieving, feeling lonely and honestly apprehensive. The grieving signifies that although I embrace non-duality, there are still parts of me that is holding on to a God that appears to be separate from me. There is still, so it's good that you can see that there are two viewpoints, and reading as the author will, excuse me, just put my phone on silent that I forgot to do, just realized, there we go. So reading as the author will bring up these two points of view, one part of you that feels powerful and self-assured and confident as the One, and the other part of you that really doesn't, and perhaps may even feel threatened by this kind of practice. And it's good that you're recognizing that. There is still a part of me that wants to call upon that God. There's a part of me that doesn't trust I can identify as God, the noumenon, self, etc. There's something in me, there is something in me that feels lacking, and not able to identify as omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent. How can I be all these things? On the other hand, there's also part of me that knows I'm already moving in the direction of fully embracing identification as a self. And I'm grieving what I seem to be letting go of in the process. So that's perfect. Ego is never, ever going to feel omniscient, omnipresent. It's just omnipotent. It's not going to ever be capable of that, and it's not supposed to. And it's enough to see that there are two parts of you still, two ways of perceiving, either as your unlimited infinite self or limited finite self. Don't have to fight with that. Just with your interest in the question, then you're beginning to, in reading as the author as well, you're beginning to just gently move into one without pushing against the other. You can't fix ego, and you can't make it into the self, and you don't need to. You can just leave it be. That's the best way to love it. Stop trying to make it be something it's not, like we all do. So contemplation questions that arise are, is it true there's anything to let go? Is it true whatever I think I'm letting go is real? If it seems real, what makes it real? Very good questions. What makes it seem real is societal and familial conditioning. Many of my circles include individuals who embrace and pray to a God separate from themselves. I don't know yet how to navigate self-identification in the midst of this. Even in some non-dual teachings, there is language in that makes it seem as if God and I are separate. I'm aware of layers of letting go must take place. Yet again, the contemplation question arises, is it true there's anything to let go? So you get to have both. You get to know you are that God, that self, that noumenon, and that you're everywhere. And you can also embrace a sense of duality. There's moments when I feel moved to pray, absolute gratitude. Gratitude to what or whom? You know, it's one of those where there isn't anything else other to pray to, but we can enjoy the sense of duality, the sense of being someone and not the actuality. I mean, why would we sing bhajans? Why would I do mantra? Why would I hold satsang if I knew there was only me? If I only stayed in an absolute place, I wouldn't move or speak or do anything. Probably drop the body sooner rather than later. So, but we can have both. We can recognize our everywhereness, that there isn't anything other than the self, than myself. And we can also enjoy the sense of being someone somewhere, praying to God. And we can also understand that in other parts of my everywhereness, other human beings, where I'm appearing as these other human beings, there is still the belief that they are separate to the self. And that's absolutely fine. There's nothing to say that feeling separate to the self is worse than how we're beginning to see our everywhereness. It's really only worse than if we're ready to move beyond it. And if someone isn't ready to move beyond it, absolutely fine. And when I really embraced this, I could, I ended up taking my dad to church one time before he passed away. And I couldn't do that before because of the sense of separation. I just didn't feel comfortable. And it was one of the most beautiful things, everyone gathered together in worship like that. Without me caring about the dogma and all of that stuff, it was just a beautiful experience praying to God. And, you know, it doesn't matter really whether we're offering our worship to the one or to a seemingly separate God. It's all the same. So just get more and more comfortable. You've got both perspective as a human being. You get to experience your everywhereness, and also it seems like you're someone somewhere doing something. And that's fine. It's really good. Okay. I have a belief that if I am the self, then I'll be lonely. If there is no other, then I will be all alone and there'll be no one to turn to. This seems so silly to me. How can God or the noumenon be lonely? It doesn't seem to fit, and I don't know. I believe loneliness is an experience of passing energy. Does God experience anything? I don't know. Maybe. Wow. These unresolved beliefs and conditioning are actually what makes me apprehensive as I move along the path. There is a voice asking, are you sure you want to continue down this rabbit hole? Apparently so, because here I go hopping into the unknown, along into the unknown. So the loneliness, the apprehension is how ego sees it. The separate someone doesn't want to feel alone because it is only, if there is only me, I'm alone, then I lose all my friends, my relationships, all of that gets lost in that. And that's the fear. I don't want to even lose all of that. It's too much for the ego to lose. You can only come to understand that that's not how it actually is. To be alone as the one, there can be no loneliness ever. You feel, it's the extinction of loneliness as the one, living as the one. Also, you can understand how some fragment of ego hopefully can feel that way. Does God experience anything? No, not at all. Why? Because it's the one. There isn't a dualistic experiencer. And what is experienced? And yes, God does experience something when it thinks it's a separate being it's experiencing. So yes and no. Powerful question. So whichever way we want to look at it, as a separate being, we'll be experiencing as the one we're not experiencing. There's nothing to experience. Both of those are fine. if you don't fight, just seeing clearer what's absolutely true. Where am I? The only answer that occurs to me is that I'm everywhere, somewhere, and nowhere. These are all essentially the same thing when you consider the nature of who I am. Well, I'd like to just add to that. It's very true. Everywhere. I am everywhere, and I am somewhere, and nowhere. Well, I'd like to say nowhere in particular. Even everywhere refers to everywhere there is a form. And as we see closer in lesson four, there aren't really forms in the way that we think. That map of the universe that we were talking about becomes a blank page. As we see, the forms aren't really forms, they are the formlessness. I think that maybe that's what you're getting at with this. They are all essentially the same thing when you consider the nature of who I am. Yeah, so I can know myself to be everywhere. I can also appear to be somewhere and nowhere in particular. I can't be nowhere full stop because that's absence. And I can never be absent as the one. I'm always present completely. Let's say I am the color blue. Let's also say there is a vast square that represents all that there is. Everything in the square is blue, everything. People are blue, trees are blue, water is blue, air is blue, emotions are blue, buildings are blue, animals are blue. Everything is blue. Here are three answer scenarios to the question, where am I? Number one, if who I am is blue, I don't have a true sense of what blue looks like or feels like. Yes, you, as the one, you cannot experience what you are. You cannot come to know what you are as the one. And you don't need to. I think that's what you're pointing to. Yep. Everything I see, sense and feel, including myself, will be unrecognizable as blue to me. My answer might be blue is nowhere. This is powerful inquiry. This is exciting. So when you've always been everywhere all the time, how would you recognize yourself? Where would you look from? If you're looking from everywhere, every point in the universe simultaneously, which is what you're doing, how would you recognize yourself? You can only kind of pull off this illusion of being someone somewhere so that you seem to have a reflective point to look back to go, oh, everything else is blue. Everything else is me. That becomes clearer. Number two, if I am blue, however, I haven't fully grasped what blue truly looks like or feels like. I might say that blue is in some spaces because I don't have full understanding to recognize blue in all spaces. I'm not fully certain what that one means. Number three, if who I am is blue and I truly know what blue looks and feels like, I would say that blue is everywhere. The key is that no matter what I know, feel or sense, or don't know, feel or sense, blue is blue and that's all there is. Does it even matter trying to determine where it is or I am? Not as the one. As the one, you don't even need to know. As every awareness, there's nothing to know, nothing to do, no urge to realize the truth, none of that. All of that comes back into relevance as a someone somewhere. This is why there's such utter quietness comes from this question, where am I? Because you can't even identify as someone coming out of illusion, waking back up to the truth. It's powerful, powerful stuff. I'm not sure why it popped into my head to use blue to represent the noumenon. I started this contemplation a few days ago, but abandoned it because I felt I was going off the deep end. Ironically, later that night, I began binge-watching the show Watchmen. Episode 8 was really all about these teachings. There is a character who is highly evolved with the understanding from number 3 mentioned above. He was trying to explain who he was to someone who identified as number 1 mentioned above. At some point, the number 1 character asked the highly evolved number 3 character, "Where are you?" He said, "You can find me in every moment. We were together all at once." The number 3 character was literally the blue color that was his skin color. I haven't seen that, so I don't really want to comment on that too much, but it sounds pretty much like what we're talking about here. Okay. So Read the rest in a separate recording. There's some powerful inquiry coming from this. I hope you're starting to get a sense of that. Wonderful.